You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. My co-host, Veronica Rickert, is out today. Coming up after 7, it's this week's edition of Reveal. With the future of race-based affirmative action up for debate, Reveal spends an hour talking about racial disparities in education. That's tonight after 7 here on the Ideas Network. Now, one of the biggest shadows hanging over the Obama administration is the continued operation of the detention facility at Guantanamo Bay in Cuba. Throughout President Obama's candidacy and presidency, he's called for the closing of the prison, but as we reach the final months of his term in office, the facility remains open. Not that there haven't been efforts to try and close Guantanamo. A lot of plans have come and gone over the years. The latest seems to be dead in Congress, but President Obama has insisted he doesn't want to pass on the problem to the next president, whoever it is. So can it be done before that new president is sworn in? And if so, what would have to happen? We'll look at those questions and the broader issues of closing Guantanamo in just a few moments. But first, Meg Jones from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel joins us. She recently wrote about a Wisconsin National Guard unit that's getting ready to deploy to Guantanamo. Meg, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure.
So you recently reported 120 Wisconsin National Guard troops will soon be deploying to Guantanamo Bay. What can you tell us about that?
Yep. So it's the 32nd Military Police Company. It's a unit that's based out of the Milwaukee area, southeastern Wisconsin. About 60% of the unit is going to be heading to Guantanamo Bay. It's a unit of about 200 people, and it's seen a lot of action in the last couple of decades. It was deployed twice to Iraq in 03 and 04, and then again in 09 and 10. And it's my understanding that, you know, because military police companies, they're typically doing police-type activities, whether it's guarding prisoners or when they were in Iraq, they were actually mentoring the local police. So it's my understanding that they will be doing the detention things, you know, basically they'll be like sort of on a par of prison guards down at Gitmo.
And, yeah, that will be their mission there, to join the team of military prison guards in Guantanamo. Is that right?
Yeah, yep, that's true. From what I understand also, it's as there's fewer and fewer prisoners at Guantanamo, that doesn't mean there's fewer and fewer guards. There's still, a fairly sizable garrison that has to be there to accommodate the prisoners, but then all of the people that are associated with down there. So these Wisconsin troops, they were notified in actually 2014 that this mission was likely to come up. So they've been preparing and training for that, and they should be leaving fairly soon. I don't know exactly when, but it'll be sometime this spring they'll be heading down to Cuba.
Meg, you've reported on Wisconsin National Guard units in Iraq and Afghanistan in the past, now Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. I think a lot of people may not know that this is part of the National Guard's job listing. They actually do come up for these international or overseas, in this case, deployments a lot, don't they?
Exactly. And, you know, we really started to see a lot more of the National Guard and Reserve units being used in the early 2000s because with their two-front war in both Iraq and Afghanistan, there just simply were not enough active-duty military that could handle what was going on over in Iraq and Afghanistan. So as a result, National Guard units like in Wisconsin started getting called up, and at first it was the units like transportation, military police, communications units that were getting called up, but then by about late 04 and 05, as the war was, especially in Iraq, was dragging on, then they started sending combat arms units, meaning infantry and artillery units. And that was the first time that had been done, where Wisconsin National Guard or any National Guard combat arms units were being sent to war zones since World War II. So the kind of the joke back in the mid-2000s was that there's only three types of Wisconsin National Guard members: those who are in Iraq, those are come back from Iraq, and those who are going to Iraq. So it was very common to use National Guard and Reserve units back then in the 2000s, and that's continuing on because they were also sent to Kosovo, and there's also always been a Reserve and National Guard component that's also been at Guantanamo Bay as well.
And Meg, are you going to be covering the Wisconsin unit going to Guantanamo in the future?
Well, I'll probably cover their going away ceremony. I don't know if they allow reporters to go down to Cuba and to cover them down there because it's all because it's all detainee center down there. But yeah, I've been covering the Wisconsin National Guard for pretty much, you know, as a regular beat since the Iraq War. So yeah, I'm sure I'll be writing some stories about them when they're down there as well.
Meg, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That's Meg Jones, reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. She specializes in military and veterans issues. Now for a broader look at the issue of Guantanamo Bay, we turn to Stephen Vladek. He's a professor of law at American University's Washington College of Law. He's also co-editor-in-chief of Just Security, an online forum for the analysis of U.S. national security law and policy. Steve, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, we've been hearing about this effort to close Guantanamo, both by candidate Obama, President Obama, President Bush, George W. Bush had talked about it. In short, why has this proven to be so hard to do?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest obstacles have been twofold. I think on the one hand, President Obama was really surprised by just how hard it was to convince other countries to take some of the detainees who we've spent so much of the last 10, 15 years labeling as terrorists. And so the diplomatic negotiations have been far more fraught than candidate Obama could ever have predicted. But also, starting in 2010, Congress has enacted these fairly onerous transfer restrictions that have made it categorically illegal for the president to move any of the detainees here into the United States, and has imposed a whole bunch of certification requirements before the president can transfer detainees to foreign countries. So added together, that's really put a trap on Guantanamo where, you know, it's only with the most, I think, careful negotiations that Obama's even going to get some of the detainees, you know, sent to third-party countries.
That said, the number of detainees has gone down over the years from three digits, you know, to 300 down to, I think, we're at about 80 now. So how have we reduced those numbers over the years?
Yeah, I mean, you know, President Obama, the population's down to exactly 80 as of today. That's one-third of the 242 that President Obama inherited from President Bush. And I think a lot of that has been because of very careful, very detailed diplomatic negotiations with other countries. You know, virtually all of the detainees who have been transferred under President Obama's watch have been sent overseas, including the most recent transfer of 9 detainees to Saudi Arabia. So, you know, there's no question that President Obama has made a lot of progress. That said, I think he would be the first to admit that he had no intention, you know, 7 full years into his presidency, of still having Guantanamo on his plate as a problem he has to deal with.
Those detainees just transferred to Saudi Arabia, I believe, were all from Yemen. And I was looking at the country of origin of the remaining detainees. That's a country that comes up again and again. Why have Yemeni detainees been such a roadblock? Why are they so hard to get out of Guantanamo?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's even more striking than even appears at first blush. I mean, of the 26 detainees who are still at Guantanamo who have been cleared for transfer, 21 are Yemeni. And part of the problem there is that whereas we've been sending most of these detainees back to their home countries, in the case of the Yemenis, you know, the Yemeni government is barely functioning. And so the U.S. government's not really confident in the ability of the Yemeni government to keep an eye on these guys to make sure that they don't just hit the ground in Yemen and go back to, you know, fighting for al-Qaeda or other terrorist groups. So because the U.S. hasn't been able to obtain those kinds of security assurances vis-a-vis the Yemenis have been the most intractable category, and it's only when another country, like Saudi Arabia, agrees to step up and take some of them that we've been able to transfer those guys from Guantanamo.
But it took a long time and a lot of negotiations, it sounds like, just to get this handful of detainees from Yemen accepted in Saudi Arabia. And I guess Saudi Arabia has some sort of de-radicalization programs that they use for their own citizens that these Yemeni detainees will be going into as well. Are we likely to send more of these detainees originally from Yemen to Saudi Arabia, or is this it?
I mean, I think we'll see a handful more of the Yemeni detainees going to Saudi Arabia, and maybe, you know, a couple here and a couple there going to other third-party countries. But, you know, there's going to come a point where that number of detainees who have been cleared for transfer gets stuck somewhere, you know, higher than zero. And I think part of the problem is diplomatic, right? All these countries are saying, why should we bear the burden of your detainee program when you're not taking any of them? And I think the hardest question for President Obama is, at the end of the day, would he accept closing Guantanamo if in exchange he had to sign on to some kind of domestic detention program where some of these detainees were brought into the United States.
And looking at some of the other detainees, not cleared to be transferred, some of them are under a category. It's something like indefinite detention under the rules of war, which I think a lot of people read as we're keeping them one way or another forever for all intents and purposes. Is that right?
I mean, I think that's how it looks. And I think that's, you know, part of the difficulty of being at war with a group like Al-Qaeda. I mean, during World War II, you know, we held on to some German prisoners for the better part of 10 years. We're well past that now. But, you know, the war with Al-Qaeda remains ongoing. Congress considered last year proposals to maybe scale back the statutory authorization for the use of force against Al-Qaeda, but really blanched at that because of the new threat posed by ISIL. So, you know, I think there's going to be some detainees who the government, and indeed President Obama's successor, is going to want to keep holding. You know, this is never going to go to zero, at least so long as the war with Al-Qaeda remains ongoing. And if it's not going to go to zero, I think the real question is, do those guys stay at Guantanamo, or do we bring some of them into the U.S.?
We're talking with law professor Stephen Vladek about President Obama and his efforts to close the detention facility at Guantanamo Bay. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about this situation at Guantanamo Bay? Should we be closing that facility, keeping it open, as some Republican presidential candidates say, expanding it? What would a plan to close the prison look like should Congress and state governments say, yes, we'll allow detainees to be moved from Guantanamo to the mainland United States? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about Guantanamo Bay and the detention center there and whether or not President Obama will be able to close that detention center before he leaves office. We heard earlier in the hour about a Wisconsin National Guard unit that's getting ready to deploy to Guantanamo. That got us thinking about some of the broader issues at play there. Stephen Vladek is with us. He's professor of law at American University's Washington College of Law and co-editor-in-chief of Just Security. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about this Guantanamo Bay situation? Fewer detainees there now than before, but still some there. Do you want to see it closed? Or do we need something like this? Should it be bigger, as at least a couple of presidential candidates have said? Should these detainees be relocated into the United States? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go to our callers now. Brian is online in Minocqua. Brian, hi.
Hello.
Oh, what do you think, Brian?
Well, I was there. I was at Gitmo in 2008. I was with a public affairs unit, Wisconsin Army Guard Public Affairs Unit, and we were supported.
Oop, Brian, you still there? Brian's cutting in and out. Got a summary of his comments. He said, Stephen, he'd been there in 2008, as he said, with the National Guard, and he knew from his experience there that it wasn't going to be easy to close it. Do you think that, Stephen, that President Obama was a little too optimistic in selling his case that he'd be able to close Gitmo?
I think he probably was a little bit too optimistic, and I think part of that optimism was maybe an over understanding or a too generous understanding of how quickly our foreign partners would jump at the chance to help us. But frankly, I also think that President Obama missed an opportunity. You know, he had a Democratic Congress his first couple years in office, and I think the government moved so slowly when it came to coming up with a process to figure out which detainees could be transferred, figuring out how to move these detainees, that by the time they really, you know, knew which ones they wanted to try to get rid of, politics had taken over, and fear about the, you know, potential for terrorist attacks after the Christmas Day bomber in 2009. You know, I think there was an enormous lost opportunity combined with maybe a little bit of naivete on the part of President Obama.
Brian, thanks for that call. Sorry we lost you at 800-642-1234. Steve, let's talk about that perception versus reality of the risk of bringing these detainees into the United States. How much of a risk would there be to the United States, you know, these facilities maybe as a target in the U.S.
No, I mean, it's a fair point, and there's never no risk. I think the relevant data point we have, though, is that we've tried over 500 terrorism suspects in ordinary civilian criminal courts since 9/11, including some pretty darn high-profile suspects like Zakarias Moussaoui, the so-called 20th hijacker. And these guys have been held at U.S. military prisons or U.S. civilian prisons, U.S., you know, high-security and supermax prisons, without any attempt to free them, without any attacks on those facilities. So I don't think it's a non-concern, but I also think that if this were such a big deal, we would have seen something over the last 15 years. You know, these are the safest prisons we can build, and if they've worked so far, I'm not sure why moving some of these detainees into the U.S. would somehow make them more vulnerable.
And Steve, I wanted to ask about the legal situation of detainees at Guantanamo Bay. At best, it seems like there's a pretty big gray area. A lot of civil rights organizations nationally and internationally say this violates constitutional law, international law. Where do you see their status right now?
Well, I mean, I think it depends on, you know, which category of detainees we're talking about. So, you know, although there are 80 guys still at Guantanamo, they actually break down into a couple different camps. We talked earlier about the guys who are still being held potentially indefinitely under the laws of war. If we just focus on the other categories, the guys who have been cleared for release and the detainees who are being subjected to military commissions, you know, I think there are more and more judicial decisions where courts are recognizing that they have at least some protection, where we can't just, you know, put these guys away and forget about them. The real question, I think, is whether as time goes on, if these detainees are just languishing in Guantanamo in perpetuity, might the courts become even more aggressive in suggesting that perhaps we can't hold them forever, in suggesting that they're entitled to greater process if we're going to try to hold them for, you know, decades on end. You know, I think that's the elephant in the room. And ultimately, besides just the sort of moral argument that we've heard from President Obama, I think the practical concern is that if the political branches really do nothing to close Guantanamo, eventually the courts might have to.
Talking to Steve Vladek from American University about Guantanamo, efforts to close the detention facility there. We'll go to a caller at 800-642-1234. Austin is with us in Madison. Austin, hi.
Hi. I believe the question of whether to close Guantanamo Bay comes down to whether people believe in torture and whether they believe in innocent until proven guilty. Because the prisons in the United States are adequate to house people who have been given a trial and are not going to be tortured. But if we want to do those extra things, then we need a place like Guantanamo.
Austin, thanks for the call. So you're saying torture at Guantanamo and getting rid of the principle, in effect, of innocent until proven guilty. What do you make of that, Steve?
Well, I think those are two very good points, but I think we should take them separately. Mm-hmm. You know, I think one of the things President Obama has been unquestionably successful at is ending the unlawful interrogation techniques that pervaded so much of his predecessor's administration. You know, yes, Guantanamo is still a problem. I think, yes, from some people's perspective, it's still a stain. But there's just no question that from the perspective of detainee treatment, we're doing much better now than we used to. As for the whole innocent until proven guilty, I mean, it is true historically that we have held soldiers of enemy armies without any kind of, you know, proof that they committed a crime. Just think about, you know, German soldiers during World War II, you know, Confederate soldiers during the Civil War. I think the real question is not, is there any legal authority to hold prisoners in that context? The real question is there enough process to make sure that these guys are who the government says they are, and that the legal authorities the government is relying upon are being invoked properly? And that's what so much of the fight has been about. That's why the Supreme Court's 2008 ruling that the Guantanamo detainees were entitled to habeas corpus was such an important moment in this story. There are still 80 guys there. You know, some of those will never get a day in court, and that's something we should all be worried about. But at the very least, they've had some process and some opportunity to show that they're not who the government says they are. You know, reasonable folks can disagree about whether that process was sufficient, but I think there's at least, you know, some support that at least some of those guys are lawfully detained.
We've talked about some legal issues, practical issues, political issues surrounding Guantanamo. How about the symbolic issues? How big does Guantanamo loom as a symbol in our international relations?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's where Austin was really onto something in his question. I mean, I think the torture issue, even though it's no longer a ongoing concern is part of why Guantanamo as a symbol is such a black mark for President Obama and something he wants so desperately to close, even if he doesn't want to end the actual policy. And so I think that's why, from President Obama's perspective, there's a real imperative to get this done on his watch, not because he thinks the policy should be ended, but because he wants to be responsible for the complete repudiation of the tactics and of the abuses and the mistreatment. And maybe what's going to happen is, you know, he won't get a Congress that's willing to work with him until after the presidential election, and then a lame duck Congress might actually be willing to work with a lame duck president if they think they'll get a better deal from President Obama than, for example, from a President Clinton.
Steve, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Stephen Mladek. He's professor of law at American University's Washington College of Law and co-editor-in-chief of the online forum Just Security. He joins to talk about Guantanamo Bay's detention center. I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.